This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the Full Blast Podcast. I'm Jeff Fader, and I'm here with Ben Snoor. Yeah, you know how it is. He's my guy. Ben Snoor's in the house, and I'm looking forward to hearing from all the adventures he's having. First things first, let's take care of a little business. First things first, my guys at Broadbeck Ironworks have a Black Friday sale. You should definitely go over to their Black Friday sale, and you go to broadbeckironworks.com and get yourself involved with their big sale. I don't know how long it's going to go on for, but you got to take advantage while you can. Knife Talk 10 will not work during the Black Friday sale, but as soon as it's over, you can go back to Knife Talk 10 for 10% off. But get yourself good deals while you can. They're great grinders, great power hammers, all that stuff. Next are my friends at Even Heat, manufacturer of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-chillin.com. I love my Even Heat, and I couldn't run this business without it. So definitely 100% thank you. Many thanks to Even Heat. Get the tap control, solid state drive. The machines are bomb proof, and the customer service is the best in the game. Got to get it hard. You got to use an Even Heat. I want to thank my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. It's maritimeknifesupply.com for all your knife making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, presses, heat treating ovens, all that stuff. And if you need to get stocked or resupplied or whatever you need, you go to maritimeknifesupply.com. They got the great belts. They got great, all the stuff you need. And you know why they have all the stuff you need? Because Lawrence Lake is a knife maker. He's taken classes. He makes knives. He's an awesome bladesmith. And he knows what you need because he needs it too. So go to maritimeknifesupply.com and check out what the fuss is about. I highly suggest get that 1080 hex bar, which is like unbelievable stuff. So definitely go to get your hands on some of that and go over to that maritimeknifesupply.com. Once again, he supports the schools that I appreciate, New England School of Metalwork and the Center for Metal Arts, and that's important to me. So I think it should be important to you too. So he knows what you need. Next, my friends at Trojan Horse Forge, makers of the stable rail knife finishing vise. Their vise are built in the heart of Texas and designed to take your handle finishing to a whole new level. Definitely go to TrojanHorseForge.com, and when you put in the promo code FULLBLAST10, you get 10% off everything. Check out what they have, the T4 Sentinel Oil, the knives, the classes, definitely worth it. TrojanHorseForge.com. Oh, my boys at Baker Forge are doing it again. They're causing problems on the internet. They're asking questions. You got to follow Baker Forge at Tool on Instagram, because they're constantly trying to ask questions for people to be engaged with. And then what happens is some of these motherfuckers get upset. And then I think that's when all the good stuff happens. So definitely go over to BakerForge.com. You're going to say to me, what do they make? They make the best steels around. Awesome steels. Copper my, cyan my, bronze my, all that stuff. I did a collab with my guy, Tomer Botner, and we made four choppers with the Tiger My Wavy. And they sold immediately. I didn't even have a chance to post about them because Tomer already sold them all. And the stuff is awesome. Their stuff is great. And if you go to BakerForge.com, you can get the promo. And if you use the promo code FULLBLAST, you're going to get 10% off. But here's the best part. Not only do they have great steels, they also have great cleaner. This is a grease cleaner. It gets your steel ready for etching. It's called the Grime Reaper. It's really, really good. I have some of it. It's awesome. And it's safer than using brake parts cleaner. And then when it's time to etch, you got to use that Gator Piss. You know what I'm saying? You use that Gator Piss. They got three different types. They got Gator Piss, the OG one. They got the Gator Piss Max, Gator Piss Heavy. If you're doing that stainless Damascus, you want to use that Gator Piss Max. And they're starting to make beautiful stainless Damascus, which is, I have been thinking for a long time, is the future of custom knife making. So definitely go get over there. You can also get the Gator Piss over at Texas Farrier Supply. Texas Farrier Supply has got everything you need. I get my abrasives there. I get my sandpaper there. I get blacksmithing stuff, bladesmithing stuff, farrier stuff, however you identify. And if you go to TexasFarrierSupply.com, you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you're going to get 10% off everything. 10% off everything. That's right, 10% off everything. So definitely get yourself squared away with them. And Texas Ferry Supplies are my guys. Speaking of my guys, I want to thank my friends at Total Boat. TotalBoat.com/FullBlast is your link to get yourself all the best adhesives, paints, primers, polishing compounds, all that stuff. I've been using their two-part epoxy forever, and I love it. I've been using their Fathom to make I actually just sold a hybrid handle material with Fathom. That's ready to go. That stuff is awesome. You know pressure pots needed because it cures so slow. I love their CA glue. I love their UV cure resin. I love all that stuff. I'm specifically only using Total Boat. So definitely get yourself, if you're a knife maker and you want to know what this fuss is about, go get yourself some of that two-part epoxy. You're going to love it. TotalBoat.com/FullBlast. The hyperlink's in the show notes. And then that's going to get you direct access to savings. Direct access to savings. You don't know much better than that. TotalBoat.com/FullBlast. And next, and go follow them because they're great. And you don't have to be a knife maker. They're usually for like, you know, all sorts of DIYers and makers and all that stuff. They're making all sorts of stuff, that Total Boat. So should you. Made in America. So all stuff's made in Rhode Island. Next, my friends at G.L. Hansen & Sons, that's G.L._Hansen & Sons for all that G-Carta, those unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed under epoxy, mixed with epoxy under pressure and heat. This stuff is awesome, and everyone's asking for it. The Mexican blanket, that's hot stuff, and all their trout colors are really, really great, and I love all of it. I really love all of it, and if you go to gcarter.bigcartel.com, you can see it all, and I actually, faderknives.com, and when this comes out, I think that there's going to be a 30% off sale on faderknives.com. We have a pile of knives with lots of G-Carta on it, so if you want to get yourself some G-Carta, you want to get 30% off, go to faderknives.com. You know what I'm saying? love the G.L. Hansen & Sons. I love it. I love it. Especially love the Hoopla. Hoopla is one of my favorites. I like the Colorama, too. I like all of them. They all do really well, and they're really easy to work with, and they're really, really cool. I just had my friend Carl Friends was here from Tormek. Tormek's doing a short doc on me, and I'm really excited about that. They're amazing, and I learned all sorts of new things with all the Tormek I have. I learned all sorts of tricks, including the scissor jig. I want to make some scissors. I want to make scissors bad. And now I use the scissor jig, and I made some old scissors sharp as hell. So I'm sharpening up scissors. Not only that, I sharpen all my knives. All my knives go on the Tormek. And I'm a huge, huge fan of what they're doing, and ain't no much better than Tormek. Celebrating 50 years in being a business, go to Tormek_Sharpie on Instagram. And then you can also go to Tormek_Culinary for all their culinary stuff. So definitely check it out. I can't say enough great things about the customer service and the product, Tormek. Now, if you're in Australia and you're thinking to yourself, God damn it, I want all this stuff, but I don't know how to use any of it. I want to learn how to make stuff, but I don't want to buy all. I want to buy all this stuff, and I want to get all the savings. I want to listen to what Jeff has to say about all this stuff, but I also want to learn how to do it. If you're in Australia, you got to go to Nordic Edge. Go to nordicedge.com.au. Not only do they sell great knife supply, they're a knife supply company. They have all the stuff you need, including their jig, their plunge line jig. The file guide is unbelievable. Screw-on file guide is the best I've seen. I love it. I use it all the time. I got two of them, and I use them all the time. Go to Nordic Edge, Nordic_Edge on Instagram, and then you can check out what they have, nordicedge.com.au. You can take classes. They have blacksmithing, bladesmithing, spoon carving, leatherworking, all that stuff. And then you can make the decision if you want to get involved with all this stuff or you just want to, you know, just take some classes. That's what I would do. So definitely go over to nordicedge.com.au, and many thanks to my friends over there. Last but certainly not least, I want to thank my friends at Phoenix Abrasives. Phoenix Abrasives supplies superior abrasive products for every application, knife making, metal fabrication, glass fabrication, floor sanding, crankshaft, all that stuff, whatever crankshaft is. I never found out what crankshaft is, but hey, look, they're selling stuff for it. So if you want to say yourself, get yourself squared away with a crankshaft, you get yourself some Phoenix Abrasives. Belts, grinding discs, cutting discs, flap discs, surface conditioning stuff. I bet you could ask them if they had the grinding discs that get you into the Louvre. You know, those guys got in the Louvre with a right angle grinder and some discs. I want to know what discs they have. And if people know what it is, it's going to be Phoenix Braces. They're going to know. So send them a message and say, hey, do you have those discs that the guys got broken into the Louvre with? And then when you go to checkout, you go to phoenixabrasives.com, and then you put in the promo code FB10. You get your 10% off everything. So definitely, without question, get yourself some of that and get yourself some of this. And is my guest here? Is my man Ben Snoor here?
He is here. He is present.
Ben Snoor is the man. It's always wonderful having you on. I always have such a good time. I get so many messages of people who love it when you're on.
Well, how many do you get that they hate it? Probably just as many.
I don't think I get a lot of that.
That's surprising.
No.
I need to step up my game a little bit.
You know, here's the problem. This isn't the problem. This is the good thing. I don't usually get problems. Like, I rarely get problems in general. And I think that I feel like I attract a certain level of person who's just like, I don't like it. It's fine. You know, I don't have to make a production about it. You know,
so fair enough.
I never get really problems. I used to get problems on Knife Talk. I used to get vicious problems on Knife Talk. People did not like it when Mareko. Well, they didn't like it when I came on. So it was actually quite a problem. But you know, we worked through it.
Well, you made the show tremendously better.
And I tried. You know, I tried. It's good. It's still a good show, and yeah. We're still having a good time. It's still like, you know, it's hilarious. Podcasting is hilarious. It's like, it's so funny because I come from a totally different era than most of the people who do podcasts are from. And you are too.
Yeah.
You and I used to talk about talk radio all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Ellis. You listen to Jason Ellis.
Oh, yeah.
We used to listen to Jason Ellis. He was terrific, wasn't he?
Jason Ellis, Covino and Rich, Stern.
Covino and Rich. Yeah.
Just all the Sirius XM ones that were, you know, kind of just guy shows and humorous.
And I feel as though that didn't really transfer over to the podcast space. Like, I feel like having good qualities. I got in trouble already because I've been taking too many shots at other podcasts, which is fine.
No, do it. Do it. Let's talk shit.
It's okay. I got some messages. I shot my mouth off, and I think some people were upset about it. But look, I'm just trying to be mildly entertaining.
Yeah.
How are you?
Man, I'm good. I'm good. Just living life.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Oh, we I don't know. It's dry. It's still too warm around here.
Huh.
It's windy. I mean, shit. Can you hear the wind?
Not at all.
Fuck, it's blowing like a two-headed queer out there. But yeah, we've been doing
trying to fucking kill me over here.
Went to New Orleans week before last. First time I'd ever been there. It was an experience.
Tell me about it.
It was the wife's birthday, so we went down there. We met her parents down there and got an Airbnb in what I believe is called the Garden District.
Okay.
Where all the big old, beautiful old houses are.
Yeah.
Just amazing trees. I've never seen trees like that.
Is that your first time in New Orleans?
First time in New Orleans. Most likely my last time. That place is a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like Vegas. It's a lot.
I remember the first and only time I went to New Orleans was a number of years ago. My wife had a conference to go to, and every so often, if there was someplace fun to go, maybe my daughter would go or I would go, and we just made a plan that we would go with her to New Orleans. Never been there, and I have friends. I have all former coworkers live down there.
Got it.
And I was shocked. I was shocked at the New Orleans lifestyle. The one thing was I got into a cab, and there was this big sign in the cab that said, "If you hurt or kill the driver, it's an immediate death penalty," which I was just like, whoa.
The fact that they need that. Sign.
Yeah. Well, the other thing was I was at a friend's house, which was walking distance to the hotel. And we were watching a fight or something like that. And the fight was over and I was going to walk home. And
just a fight on the street?
No. It could have been. No, but it was like, I think it was like a UFC fight or a boxing fight. We were watching at his house. And then I was just, all right, I'm just going to walk back to the hotel. And they said, no, you're not. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to walk back to the hotel. I'm like, no, you're not. I said, I can see it from here. It's not even 10 blocks. And he goes, no, you're going to get mugged or killed.
Uh-huh.
And there, it was like, I was just like stupefied because I've walked in terrible neighborhoods in New York and, you know, I kind of know what I'm doing.
Yeah, you grew up in the 80s in New York.
Right. I mean, yeah.
You didn't grow up in Brooklyn, I don't think, or where.
I used to go to Brooklyn. I didn't grow up in Brooklyn, but I mean, I was on the side. We're not letting you walk back. They drove me home because they were terrified for my safety. And then the last thing was the drinking all day, like the to-go cups. And the amount of drinking that starts early in the day, I was kind of shocked about.
Dude, you got to pace yourself there. You got to pace yourself and drink some water as well.
I mean, I was, and then we went to Cafe Du Monde, which is that famous beignet place. And I guess in the mornings, they hose the streets down because of all the urine and barf and the night before, you know, rowdiness. Uh-huh. They got to like hose the whole streets down and pour perfume on the streets because how vile human beings get.
That is unsurprising. Yeah, we went and first night there, we went on a Friday and came back on Monday. First night there, you know, I've always heard about Acme Oyster Bar in New Orleans. So we were like, all right, we're going there. We make it down, we get a cab or an Uber and we make it down to Bourbon Street. And it's early. I mean, hell, it was like, I don't know, 5:30 or something like that. But we, you know, we've been traveling. And so, of course, I've been drinking all day because that's what I do when I fly. But there was a jillion people there already. And there's a line out the door. You know, you can't make, I don't know if you can make reservations or not, but it didn't seem like it. And so we just had to wait in line. And across the road, across this Bourbon Street, there's a hurricane selling place, so I went and got us a couple of hurricanes. I gave one to Alex's folks, and then Alex and I split one. And that started out the night either right or wrong, but they were very, very stout.
Oh, really?
Oh, shit. Just terrible. And so Alex's mom ended up drinking hers pretty much all by herself, and hers was stronger than ours, and I mean, it didn't put her under the table immediately, but it didn't take all that long.
How are the oysters? Did you get the oysters?
Yeah, I had the oysters. They're Gulf oysters. They're good. They're not like what y'all can get up there in the Northeast or whenever we order them here. But they're good, big old good oysters. And had some charbroiled oysters that were good, but still not quite up to snuff as the oven-baked ones that I learned from Jeff Fader.
Did you go to Drago's?
I did not. See, and that's the thing. I didn't really know where to go. I just knew Cafe Du Monde and Acme Oyster Bar. And we actually didn't even end up going to Cafe Du Monde. There was too many people, and I don't give a shit about a piece of fried bread. So we went some other place just directly across the road and had crab cakes, eggs Benedict.
Oh, that sounds... You know what? I think the beignets are a little overrated.
They're totally overrated.
It's a
donut hole.
They're fine.
Yeah,
but it's like
fine.
The powdered sugar. I could, you know, you just like I don't like powder in general. So like I get like skeeved out by it. But I mean, I think they're fine. They didn't kill me. We did have amazing food down in New Orleans.
Yeah.
We actually stayed in the hotel that Drago's is the famous place that does the charbroiled oysters.
Okay,
and that's where I first had them. And God damn, we ordered like three plates of them. We couldn't stop.
And was that in New Orleans?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Yeah, far from Cafe Du Monde, like because Cafe Du Monde is kind of close to the water, I think.
Yeah,
and if you kind of followed.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by Walden University. Ever catch yourself thinking, "What if I could go after what I actually want and really make a difference?" You're not alone, and that's exactly why I want to tell you about Walden University. For over 50 years, Walden has helped working adults like you get the W with the knowledge and skills to build the future you want and make a difference where it matters most. If you've been waiting for the right moment, this is it. Head to waldenu.edu and take that first step. Walden University. Set a course for change. Certified to operate by Chev.
I don't even know which direction it is, but if you follow the opposite of the I guess the uptown way across, you run it.
You go left or right, and you end up there.
Yeah, if you were facing Cafe Du Monde and you go right and you keep going, you'll walk right into Drago's. And
okay.
You know, I think the food is amazing. I mean, I think that people. I have a very close friend who's from New Orleans. These are hard living people.
Yep.
I mean, the drinking and the eating. These are hard living people. Hard living people.
Yeah. Well, and so we went to Acme, and then we just, you know, prowled down Bourbon Street until we found one of those places, a piano bar.
Okay.
And piano bars are kind of amazing to me, like where they have the dueling pianos, and those guys know every fucking song in the world. They can play it, and they can sing it, and if it's new, they know it. If it's old, they know it. And so, I enjoy those.
You know what you might like, and I think that you might like it. Did you see the documentary on Billy Joel?
I have not seen it yet. I plan on it.
I cannot believe how great it was.
I will watch it.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. The first, there's two episodes, and it just talks about him and how he started in the 70s. And like how, you know, and just his whole story is so fascinating. But his song Piano Man came from the fact that he had his first record deal was the guy who was ripping him off. And he was so upset about it, he just decided to change his name and be a piano singer to wait out the contract. And he worked as a piano player at a piano bar.
I did not know that.
And that whole song, Piano Man, is all about like the people he met there. Funny enough, Hillary is just like, have you ever noticed that in the Piano Man, it's all the customers are dudes? She's like, you think it was a gay bar? And I'm like, I don't know. You might be right. You might be crazy. Just, there's a Billy Joel for you. But it was really a great. It's
I'd
a
like
great
to
documentary.
See it.
Oh, it's on HBO. It was really interesting because that was like the Billy Joel Stranger album was the first. I mean, it was 1976. My mother had that. And that was like the first pop music I ever really heard was The Stranger. And that was on in our house all the time. So, but yeah, piano bars are amazing. It really, you get to the, I would imagine that you probably thought to yourself, maybe I should learn to play the piano, or I should have.
Fuck no.
Okay.
No, I don't care enough about, you know, I enjoy a little bit of music, but I'm just not that much of a music guy. My dad's a musician. He can play all kinds of shit. My sister can play piano, but me and my mother, we don't music.
I don't. You know what? Part of me wishes I could do it because I feel you listen to when you hear Billy Joel just talk about making music and stuff like that. Towards the later end of his life, it's torturous. But it's like imagine going into a room with a piece of equipment and then you're creating songs and there's something
that's
like. I know, but it's something. It's kind of like blacksmithing, except for the fact that blacksmithing is you're forging one, you know, you're making like your bottle openers, you make one and you've made it, you know, as opposed to you can create this song that you can play over and over.
Yeah,
and over.
But I mean, you can, there's so much variety you can do in forging that it's a very similar artistic thought process, I would think.
I think I agree with you because it is, but it's like, it's this one, when you forge an item, it's that one piece in time. It's not something that you can just kind of have, you know, you can do it in different ways and it can be something popular. I don't know. There's something about I think it's interesting. I'm going to have Craig's going to come on soon, probably even hopefully next week. And I want to talk about music because I'm fascinated by the concept of musicians just because it's like so foreign to me. The crazy part is my grandfather was a cellist in the New York Philharmonic back in the early 1910s. And it got to the point where if you kind of put his status now, if his status then now would be, he would be like a Jeff Beck type or like somebody who was like very incredibly well known, might not have been like the most famous guy in the orchestra, but they were like, when you said his name, you knew who you were talking about. And he was the first cellist in the New York Philharmonic. And he was like, I mean, it was a big deal, you know? And my dad tried to play the cello, and he sucked at it. And then I wanted to be, you know, have a connection with my father. And I tried to play the cello, and I hated every second of it. So I never really kind of got that. I probably pushed me away from music in general.
I had to take – I was fiddle lessons were forced upon me as a child, and I didn't want anything to do with that.
Right.
And it was a pretty short-lived career.
What's the worst experience you had in your fiddle lessons? I have terrible cello stories.
Shit, Jeff. I don't know that I really had anything that stood out as negative other than the fact that I just didn't want to do it.
And then did your dad play the fiddle?
No, that's kind of one of the ones he doesn't. He plays guitar and banjo and mandolin a little bit. He can strum on a bass, but I think, you know, maybe he thought we were going to have a family band, and I wasn't going for that.
I think that's amazing. See, my father, he liked the idea of me playing the cello, but he was a terrible, he knew how to play it, but he was a terrible teacher.
Yeah.
But my first cello teacher was such an awful woman. I'll tell you a funny story. She used to hate, she had heard of my grandfather, and she hated the fact that I was so inept at playing the cello. And she knew how, like, my pedigree, like, she had known, this is back, like I said, this is back in the early 80s. She had known who my father, because my father wouldn't shut up about, you know, who his father was. So she kind of knew who he was. And I was so inept that at one point she says to me, Jeff, does your brain ever talk to your fingers? It was like that. It was just like, you know, your brain doesn't seem to talk to your fingers at all. And I was just like, she would just berate me, totally berate me. And I'll never forget, I hated going to lessons with her because she was so cruel to me. And then my mother called, this is back in the day when there were answering machines, messages. I don't know, my mother was a shoot from the hip type person. She never really thought about what she was saying before she said it. So she just like, you know, blasted off. So my mother had to call the cello teacher to say, we couldn't make a meet. I don't know what the hell was happening. She left a message. So my mother dials a number and my teacher's answering machine goes off and it's her playing the cello, right? So the teacher's playing the cello into the fucking answering machine is, you know. And I don't know what came over my mother. Did not help me whatsoever. But she said, this is the worst message I've ever heard. Why would anyone play the cello on a voicemail message? She said that on the message.
Perfect.
And this is also before you could say, press one if you want to change your message. This was like on tape.
Yeah.
See, you had this one is the chance. Worst. This is the stupidest message I've ever heard in my life. And that, I mean, I might as well have been like the worst student ever. She hated me ever since then. And I don't know what happened. I was just like, God, her tone really changed. She's really gotten much harder on me. And then my dad told me, hey, your mother fucking, you know, your mother criticized her voicemail message. Who would play the cello into a phone
message? I'm with your mother on that.
I'm with my mother too. And you know, the funny thing is I have that sense. I really do have that shoot from the hip at times. And it's like, and I try to not, because every time I go out now with my wife and my daughter, sometimes they'll say something to me, like they'll preemptively try to prevent me from being, you know, blunt and shooting from the hip. And I know where that comes from. It comes from my mother's side.
Well, sometimes you got to let fly.
Speaking of letting fly, my grandfather, after he, and I had never met him before, he died before I was born. He was teaching, he was doing some, after he left the New York Philharmonic, he is doing some teaching. And as the story goes, one of his young students wasn't playing correctly, or something happened, or he said something my grandfather didn't like. My grandfather was a very severe man. And the lesson ended with my grandfather threatening to hit the kid over the head with the cello. He was going to bash the cello over this kid's head.
I would have been that kid.
Can you imagine this fucking grown ass man lifting up this cello and just smashing over the head of some kid who just was like, didn't, you know, it would have been me. They'd have been like, Jeffrey,
you probably could have gotten away with that.
Tune it up a little bit with this cello over your head.
Times have changed. I mean, he probably could have gotten away with it. The parents probably would have said, well, fuck, you know, yeah, he deserves it. We know what he's like.
Yeah, what did you say to the professor?
Yeah.
What did you do?
Yeah, it's back then, you know, everybody understood that my baby isn't perfect.
Yeah. You know, that's the crazy thing. When I was a kid, it was like, well, what did you do to deserve
this? Yeah, every time.
It was never my however, I will say that my father hated authority, and he used to stick up for me even when I knew I was kind of caught dead to rights. He had a real problem with authority, and I appreciated that. He used to stick up for me, and I used to do the same thing for Lila when we had any kind of weirdness. I always was like, I picked up my dad's, you know, hate of authority and yep. stick up for my kid. But you can't do that anymore.
No. So. And people just don't want to because they don't think that their baby's ever done anything wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like that's sort of going away a little bit.
It's going to have to.
It's got to.
It's going to have to. We I think the craziest part is the fact that, you know, the weirdest part about being like no one ever takes responsibility for their actions, nor the actions of their children.
Uh-uh.
So it's like we're in this weird spot where it's like you're gonna at some point you're gonna have to allow someone to hit your kid over the head with a cello or yep. something like that.
And your kid probably needs it.
This obviously,
you know, I know how my kid is. The girl one, model citizen. The boy, yeah. I mean, he is my kid. In every way, shape, and form, he is just a miniature me. And, man, we're dumb.
You know what?
We got to learn every lesson the hardest way possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really lucky that my daughter takes after her mother. Like, she's way smarter than I am. And I'm so grateful because I just know that I would be the same situation. I would be, you know, just be hard-headed.
Yeah, Pinecone, she's responsible. She's smart. She doesn't get in any trouble. And then you have the other one.
He doesn't get into trouble. He's too cute. He's a cute little little blonde-headed kid. He's like the perfect kid.
We got our issues, and it's not like he's a bad kid.
Yeah.
He's just dumb.
Oh, come on.
And I mean, not like
that.
He's not an intelligent person. He doesn't think about the consequences of his actions.
Right. Well,
like, I'll tell you one the other day, and I mean, this, luckily, it worked out the way it did, yeah. But, you know, he'd been shooting his gun around here, like, supervised, I mean, a little less supervision with a BB gun, but if we're shooting his little .22, like, we're damn sure right there with him, hearing protection, yeah. Eye protection, doing everything correctly, but I guess he'd been telling one of his little buddies about how he's been shooting guns, and his friend was like, well, can I have some bullets? And he was like, yeah. So he got into my ammo can and got like 3 9mm rounds and a .30-06 round and took him to school and gave him to that kid. And luckily, the other kid's dad sent me a text and was like, hey, dude, your boy gave my boy bullets. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? And so he lost his gun privileges for a month. But luckily, he didn't get caught at school. And the other guy, I mean, he was cool with it. And the funny thing is, I know that guy's dad, and they've got guns and shoot. I don't know why that other kid wanted bullets, but there it is. You know, he wanted to be cool and do something like that, and it's just, buddy, you got to think about this stuff.
But he's so young. How young is he?
Eight.
You know, yeah. I mean, eight-year-olds are like, I mean, that's you're so lucky that went the way it went.
Oh, big time. And you know, and Clarendon's a little different than most other. I mean, we're pretty damn rural. It's small classes. He'd have gotten in trouble, but he wouldn't have been like expelled for getting caught with that. I don't think.
Do you have any idea what would have happened if that was in here?
Prison.
In New York? Oh, that would have been easy. First, they would have locked the school down.
Oh, but, yeah.
Locked the school down. There'd have been suspensions. The kid would have been like, you know, it would have been a whole big production. Oh my God. Well,
yeah,
I'm glad it worked out the way it did.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, and Clarendon, like I said, still, like hell, the kids can still carry pocket knives to school.
That's like you got a little House on the Prairie act.
Pretty much.
I mean,
pretty
it's
much.
Like unbelievable.
Yeah.
You can't
have guns, but if you have a pocket knife with the blade smaller than the length of your palm, then you can carry it to school. The problem is some of these little farm kids, I call them little young farm kids, like, you know, in junior high or 6'3", and got mitts bigger than I do, so they can pack a pretty damn big old knife. But they're all, you know, they're all responsible with them.
And it sounds like, I mean, Claire and everybody knows each other.
Yeah,
so it's like,
for the most
this
part.
Isn't like a, and it's much a rural place.
Yeah.
This isn't, you know.
Yeah, a knife around here, I mean, it's a tool. It isn't a weapon. Nobody
right.
carries it. You know, most people don't carry a pocket knife to stab somebody or for self-defense.
I don't think so.
I think very few people, like, I guess it runs through your mind on occasion, like, well, what if I got to stab somebody? you know, but I don't know. I'd rather have a gun for that.
So what else is going on? Hey, I saw that project you did with your son when you guys made that tuning fork. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was... I was volunteered to do that because they had to make a musical instrument for science class of all classes. And he comes home and is like, we're making a tuning fork. It's like, me and you are making a tuning fork. Why? And he told me, and I ended up going, I had some, what did I use? I think I used naval bronze.
Yeah, you said naval bronze.
Yeah, and that was, I wanted something that he could actually, like, get some hammering done with versus trying to do it out of steel because he is 8, and I wanted him to do as much as he could.
Yeah.
And so that's what we ended up doing it out of. And it didn't ring that great, but it was good enough for class.
And was it, and you don't have to, you didn't have to heat it up or anything?
No, we did it hot.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we hot forged it.
Wow. And it made, it sounded like it made a pretty good noise.
It was all right. You know, the funny thing is, I was like, well, what did all the other kids make? He was like, oh, they made some really good instruments. One kid had a bottle full of rocks. Well, the bar is set pretty low, son. Like, we could have just filled you another bottle full of rocks.
He could have had a beer can full of rocks.
There you go. We could have had a glass bottle filled with, like, plastic BBs or something. I don't know.
I just remember those days of the projects. And the worst thing I got suckered into was Lila was in a play, and they asked me if I would make a rhinoceros costume, and I went bananas. I got boxes and glue guns, and I made this rhinoceros head, and it was really, really good. It was out of cardboard and glue, and I spent the whole weekend making this goddamn rhinoceros costume. And then they were just like, oh, would you like it back? I'm like, no, I don't want it back.
Yeah.
I don't want this goddamn.
What am I going to do with a cardboard rhinoceros costume?
Yeah. Yeah. And they were just like, well, we feel bad about throwing it out. I'm like, throw it out. Trust me. I don't want it. But I was just like, they said, maybe we can get you. I'm like, no. I got paid at the office. I'm done.
I've got a friend in Kansas, and his dad made, they were doing a play. And it was something about a printing press or Newsies, maybe something like that.
Okay.
And he built a windmill printing press out of plywood, and it looked. I showed it to my friend Jack, who knows about printing presses, and he was like, "Oh, that's one of these printing presses." I was like, "No, it's not." And he was like, "Yeah, it is." I said, "This damn thing is It was also functional." And made out of plywood. And then once he really got to looking at it, he was like, holy shit. But it was incredible. And just, man, you got too much time on your hands, dude.
I remember doing a few things and just being like, all right, this is enough of my life here.
Yeah.
I've done enough.
No, and they're going to remember that you did it, but they're not going to remember how much effort you put into that rhinoceros costume.
Yeah, the rhinoceros. I made a rhinoceros costume and an elephant, and they were both pretty good. They were with tons of cardboard. We just used all the cardboard we had and glue gun. What do you have any big plans for Thanksgiving?
We're going to Arizona.
Well, nice.
Yep, we're going to go down to Wilcox to Alex's family's Thanksgiving, so that means Christmas is here this year, which is awesome. And I don't know when we're leaving, and I don't know when we're coming back, but as I told my dad, I'm pretty sure we're going to be going out there sooner than I'd like and coming back later than I'd like.
Now, when you leave the ranch, is there someone who can kind of like...
Yeah, my dad comes out here and takes care of it.
Oh, that's
you know,
great.
And whenever I'm leaving for a few days, like I do everything I can to make sure all he's got to do is just kind of drive around, check on water, maybe throw some hay to horses, and that's really about it.
Do you have any Thanksgiving traditions that you're looking forward to?
No, not really. No.
Anything on the menu that's a must?
Man, one of the things that I require at Thanksgiving is cranberries, just the cranberry jelly, whatever.
Oh, out of the
mush,
can.
Out of the can. Maintain the can shape. Like, that's a go-to.
You like a slat? You like it like a, and you want?
Yeah, now, I want a wafer of cranberry sauce.
But you don't, when it comes to the table, you want it in that cylindrical form. You don't want it.
Yeah,
cut.
I don't know why.
You want to cut it yourself.
I do want to cut it myself. I like it.
And then, do you ever, is it just Thanksgiving, or would you buy a can of it for like outside of Thanksgiving?
You know, I would. I just never think. It's just one of those things you don't think about it other times of year. But I do enjoy it.
Thanksgiving flavor is really, I don't want it any other day than Thanksgiving.
Yeah, like I don't want a turkey on Christmas. I don't want Christmas food's very often the same shit as Thanksgiving. I want prime rib. I want a beef tenderloin. I want a steak. I don't want turkey or dead chicken on Christmas. But Thanksgiving, I will do it. Alex's uncle's a hell of a cook. He lives down in Lubbock, which is fairly near to here, but he goes out there to Wilcox, and he does a hell of a turkey.
Wow. So what makes it so good?
You know, he did it. The best he's done, and he got the most compliments on, he's never done it again. And he like kind of did a combination of grilling and smoking.
Yeah.
So it was smoked and it had a lot of smoky flavor, but it also was like cooked over more direct heat for quite a while. So the skin was real crispy, and man, that skin, whenever it's nice and crispy, like you just get to eat it like chips. I love it.
Yeah. Thanksgiving is really important to my wife. It's her favorite holiday. And
Alex's too.
And if I've been making Thanksgiving for her family, for her and her family and my family for years. And I'll tell you a funny story. I must have told this story, but this Thanksgiving story before. But before I went to culinary school, before I married Hillary, I was at Wisconsin at her family's house, and her mom asked me if I'd make the turkey. So I spent all this time with my dad, who's a really good cook.
Man, that's just a bold request of somebody to just say, hey, young man, would you do the turkey?
Well, she knew that my father was like a culinary guy.
Okay.
And she knew that Hillary would say how much I like to cook and
all
stuff
right.
like that.
All
so
right.
there was like, it wasn't just like out of nowhere. And then I said to my father, I said, Dad, you got to help me. I'm like, now I'm at 20, I'm 22 or something like that. And I'm like, Dad, you got to help me. I got to impress this family. I got to make this turkey. So he's plotting out what I could do. And I told his Hillary's mom got all the stuff, and we start to cook, and she keeps on opening the door. Don't even open the door. You open the door, it's going to get, you're going to lose heat.
Yeah, if you're looking, you ain't cooking.
If you're looking, you ain't cooking. And I said, stop. She's like, it's got to be done. I said, it's not done. And she kept opening, don't open the door. And what are you going to do? You're going to say to this, your girlfriend's mom, you're going to yell, I don't know. So after a while, she's just like, it's got to be ready. We got to eat. And I said, you're making a mistake.
Now, did you have I know they didn't have digital temperature probes in, but did you have one that you could stick in it, or did you have the little plastic thing that pokes out whenever it's done?
We had some thermometer.
Okay.
And I was also going with the whole, if you poke it and it runs, the juices run clear, and if the thigh joint wiggles freely, and there's a lot of little things, but I definitely think that I had some sort of, She says, we're taking it out. And I said, you're making a huge mistake.
Maybe she was just hungry.
No, she was. It was, I don't know what it was. Pull the thing out, let it rest, cut it open. Fucking abattoir. This motherfucker, this thing was like, it was like a slaughterhouse. I mean, it was so underdone that I cut it into parts and we put it back in the oven, and no one said another word. And then that's when I came home. I said to Hillary, I'm like, I think I'm going to go to culinary school. And because I want, and I, the joke was always that I was going to, the next time that happens, I was going to pull out my diploma, like some sort of, law enforcement badge, and say, step away from the oven.
Yeah, never underestimate the power of spite.
Yeah, spite is, I'll tell you what, spite, never underestimate the power of spite. But I just recently realized that I'm pushing it too hard with the spite. I just finished the New York City Marathon 2.5 weeks ago.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm still recovering. Like, I've gone for walks with the dogs, but I haven't done anything else. I could barely get my feet in the sneakers. My feet are pretty fucked up.
Still.
And, oh, yeah, dude. I got bruising all over the place. And I remember in probably three quarters of the way through the race, the marathon, I was about 16, 17 miles in. And I thought to myself, why do you keep doing this to yourself? And why spite your mode of energy? And why is it that you think that, you know, you need to prove something to somebody? And when you're grinding yourself to the ground,
and I'm grinding myself. This is why you're like, fuck it, this. Like, you're just stupid. I quit.
I kept going. I
know you did, but.
The problem was I had a real conversation with myself. Also, everyone's calling me on the phone, and my battery died, and I had to raw dog the last half of the marathon with nothing. And I had this conversation with myself. It was just like, you know, you got to stop fucking. If you're going to spite, don't do it to your physical health.
So like, you were talking on the phone to people while you were running?
No. Well, here's the problem. I had there was an app that you could track me with. And then the app crashed, and then I had people all over from Brooklyn into Manhattan who wanted to, you know, where I was, and they were texting me and calling me, and then I couldn't pick up the phone, but the Siri was telling me, or the watch, or the earbuds, everything was, I was just like being, you know, I couldn't answer the phone, because I'm running.
Yeah.
So it just, the Bluetooth drew out all the power, and it was just like I was down to 10%. But, yeah, I'm glad I did it, but, I mean, I'm paying the price.
Are you done now?
Oh, I don't know. We'll see. I was, after the last time, I was like, fuck this, I'll never do this again. I wasn't in as much pain this year as I was when I first did it 12 years ago. So I could definitely see if under the right circumstances, probably when I hit about 55, I'll probably reassess depending on how I feel. I would have to make some bigger adjustments in how I train in order for me to be happy, because I didn't get the time I wanted. I really kind of like, I felt better physically, but I didn't beat my time from 12 years ago.
What did you eat that night?
Oh, this is unbelievable. So I went to my high school friend, Eric, who I go to Knicks games with. This is like one of my oldest friends. We've known each other since, you know, junior high. I stayed at his house, great house. He had a great apartment on the Upper East Side, and he made me his grandmother's meatball recipe. And he made rigatoni and these fucking unbelievable meatballs. It was all I could do to not eat everything in the bowl. I mean, I could eat in the plate. It was so goddamn good. This was like the best pasta and meatballs I've had. I can't remember the last time I had, but I couldn't do better than that. I mean, that was like this was like the one thing that his grandmother taught him how to do. And it was unbelievable. And I was afraid that it was so good, I was going to want like three bowls of it. And then all of a sudden, that's when you get the problems the next day.
Yeah.
You know? But that was like lights out, delicious, fucking awesome pasta.
An Italian meatball is something I need to learn. Like, I've got other meatballs I can make. Like, I've got one with jalapenos and cheese that are grilled, and they're kind of a Southwest, and they're just phenomenal. But an Italian meatball, I would like to know how to make those.
I'll tell you what he did without the ingredients, basically. And he didn't do, you know, a lot of Italian meatball guys, they do a mix of pork, ground pork, ground beef, and ground veal. I don't think that's all. I think that's a little unnecessary.
The veal, I think, is overkill.
I think a lot. Yeah. I mean, you could just, I mean, he just did straight beef, and it was beef. And I know you throw in a little bit of breadcrumbs, an egg, a little bit of milk, and then tons of like pecorino or Parmesan cheese, and then some basil or parsley, chopped parsley, and like Italian seasonings. And a lot of people fry them, but then he didn't do that. He baked them.
Yeah.
And then he dropped them in the sauce the last minute. It was fucking good.
That sounds good.
It was really good.
What did you do the next day? Nothing?
No. I woke up. I had to wake up at 3 in the morning to get to the bus. And he made me a fucking kick-ass coffee that was like
that's a good friend. If somebody's getting up at 3 in my house, they can make their own fucking coffee.
He made me like a latte. He was all in, you know. New York's a different situation, yep. You know. It's like it was also the time change.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was really 4, and he and I are both up at 4 in the morning anyway, can't sleep anyway. So he was just like, it's like 4 anyway, so I'll be up anyway. So he made me an awesome coffee, and then we got to the bus, and then from the bus we got to the starting line, and then
Night before. I thought you were talking about the day of this. Like the night you finished, what did you eat?
Oh, the night I finished. I mean, I had made some lasagna because Lila and her friend came to stay, and I made a lasagna. So we just reheated some lasagna. But I wasn't that hungry, to be honest with you. I wasn't hungry at all.
What'd you do the following day after the race? Nothing?
Hillary got some cold cuts, and I had some cold cuts. The crazy part is you think that you'd just be like, I could eat the whole joint. I wasn't hungry at all.
Oh, I wouldn't. I was just figuring more like your body's just give out and you just did nothing.
I'll tell you the worst part was it was by about mile 20. It was a beautiful day. It was a totally beautiful day. The problem is like apparently when it gets a little bit warmer, you start to cramp up a bit. And that, around mile 19, I was kind of cramping up a bit. And this guy was canning. You know what? You would have loved it because people were handing out pizza. People were handing out beers. People were giving people shots. There was a woman giving people cigarettes. It was like 3 million people lined the thing. And it was like a party. The whole city was
a party.
That's
awesome.
And then the signs were amazing. But the funniest part, there were people giving out anything you could think of. They're, here, have a piece of pizza. Okay. You know, but people were giving out beers. They were chugging beers with the runners and giving them, there's tons of people with those fireball shots, you know, fireball shots. I stayed away from everything. Cause I was just so like, I felt like one of those boats that was going to tip over at any moment. And I think that like, I was so afraid that calamity would happen that I really didn't fuck around with, you know, slapping people's hands and talking to people.
What percentage of people finish?
Oh, they all finish.
Oh, everybody finishes.
I mean, it's, you know, some people walk, you know, and I was in, but the wave that I was in was a slower wave. And you know, if you see reels of like these old gaffers finishing at midnight, they started, I mean, the last wave, we started at 11:30 in the afternoon, which is a terrible time to start. It was amazing and people were amazing. And there was one moment where this guy, I had on my shirt, it said for Jenny. Cause I was like, I said this before last week, but you know, I didn't want to write Jeff, G-E-O-F-F, because I know that people are just calling me Geoff, and that was going to piss me off. And I didn't want to write Fader because people were just going to yell for Fetter. And then I thought, well, I should run for my sister who passed away, and I write Jenny, but then they're going to think I'm transitioning or something. You know, that crossed my mind.
I don't think you need to fear that tremendous
amount. I always said to my daughter, I was just like, look, you know what, don't cancel me, but I don't want to write Jenny because I don't want people to think that's my name. You know, that I write Ford. It was a whole, I was just such a wreck. And then this guy yells, well, if you're going to run for Jenny, you better run faster than that. And I was going to yell, fuck you. But I was so afraid.
See, I was thinking Forrest Gump, Jenny.
Oh, yeah, that's good, too. That would have been good, too. I was 100%, one step in the grave, one foot in the grave, one foot on the banana peel. I really was like, everything was incredibly tenuous, and I was really afraid of doing a whole lot of any excess energy.
Yeah.
But it was great. You know, it was really, really great. And I wish if I wasn't so, you know, crazy about the time, I could have enjoyed it more. But I was like, I was trying to spite myself.
So how long really did it take you?
5 hours and 27 minutes. I was bummed out about it, if I'm being honest. I was bummed out.
Trying to think.
I thought I could. I was shooting for like all the training and then the race predictors from my trainings. I should have just gotten sub-5,
all right,
which I really wanted to do. Because 12 years ago, I got a 5:07. And I thought that was, I thought I could do, I wanted to do sub five. And I don't know what happened. You know,
well, you
I
was, are 12 you know, years older.
I know. Well, I had to, like, I have to, like, go easy on myself about it, but it really kind of busted me up for a while.
No, I just thought. I wouldn't beat yourself up. I couldn't do that. I mean, I could. Well, I physically, my body.
You could.
Even if I was in shape, like, my feet, my ankles, and my knees would not hold up to that.
You'd be surprised. I'm telling you. I think that the funny thing is I got a lot of messages from people saying that I would never run a marathon. And I can't. I would never run a marathon anywhere else. If I didn't, if it wasn't, it ain't New York, I ain't doing it. You know, I'm not, I have no interest in it.
I got no desire to run. Sucked. That's why we have automobiles and horses.
Yeah, I don't know. I was having a midlife crisis, I think.
It happens.
And having the midlife crisis and feeling like I'm going to do better than I did when I was a kid, younger at least. Was, you know, that kind of fucked up the midlife crisis by being 20 minutes later than, you know, when I did 12 years ago. But
I went through my midlife crisis. I swapped jean brands that I wear.
Oh, yeah? Tell me about that. Oh. What jean brands are you wearing now?
There's some called branded denim. They're just kind of a Western jean, but I've worn Wranglers my whole life, and they've just gotten to where the quality of them is just shit. And so
why
I swapped. I don't know. Because they're... They're not made in the U.S., which they hadn't been for a long time, but I don't know what it is. But it's not even like the way they're constructed. It's the actual denim itself has gotten to be shittier quality. And so they just fall apart, and so I said, fuck it. I went on a little journey to find new jeans.
I hate having to fucking find new things after I've been wearing stuff that's Carhartt pants. I like Carhartt pants, but they're just so uncomfortable. And then in the wintertime, I've been wearing double front Carhartt pants since I was in college.
Yeah.
Like I was getting them in college, like 20 something years. In the winter, they are so goddamn uncomfortable. It's like wearing, I mean, it might as well being lead pants.
I loved them. Like whenever I did construction, that's what I was a trim carpenter. That's what I wore all the time. I liked them, but I also like starch pants.
Well, these are, I mean, it's more than starch. I mean, it's more than starch. Hillary,
I've had them starched. I've had the Carhartt breeches starched before. It was great.
Oh, man. I felt like I was wearing cardboard. And it was like, and it got to the point where, you know, and then when you wear them on too much, they get soft, but at the same time, it means they're also fucking unclean.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, so I've been wearing, I've really gotten into these, Patagonia makes these their version of the double front pants I like very much. So I've been wearing those for the past 2 years.
That's pretty bougie for a work pant.
Super duper bougie, but they last a lot longer than the other ones.
Well, that's,
I mean, they were, there, I then. Think they were like, they. Were, I'm very shocked at how comfortable they are and then how good they are, so. Yeah, I'd rather wear some. You know what? I am a little bougie. You know,
nothing
as I get older,
of.
I also want a little comfort.
My sister sent me an article on a pair of jeans the other day, and they were custom made jeans with a lifetime warranty. And I liked them a lot, but they were $400, and I'm not going to spend $400 on a pair of pants.
Dude, that's a lot.
And
God,
I just think they would be awesome, but I'm still not going to spend $400 on a pair of pants.
What's the most you've ever spent on a pair of pants?
$100.
I bought my wife $700 leather pants back in 2001.
That is a spendy pair of britches.
Dude, I'll tell you the story because my business partner, Tony, was the chef at the restaurant that I was at. And Hillary would come to the restaurant after work and then she'd sit at the bar and we'd talk and she would talk to me and Tony and stuff like that. And Tony always wore these leather pants. He used to wear leather pants. He was so cool. He's like, I don't know guys who can wear leather pants that look cool. He looked fucking cool. And it wasn't like it wasn't like tight leather pants. He had leather pants on. You don't wear no leather pants anymore. And Hillary would just, she's like, oh, those leather pants are really cool. So I remember we got a Christmas bonus. Our boss, Charlie Palmer, came to the, you know, he sent his guys down and gave us Christmas bonuses. And he says, you know what you got to do with it. Tony goes, you know what you got to do with that, right? I'm like, what? I said, you got to get Hillary some leather pants. I'm like, well, I wouldn't even know where to go. So he's like, you're coming with me. He took me downtown to this leather pants place, and we didn't even know the size of her pant, what size she wore. And he got me to buy a pair of $700 leather pants, and I was like sweating. That whole Christmas bonus was right in the fucking pants. And she still has the pants. The pants are awesome.
Well, did they look great on her?
They're amazing. But they were, you know, obviously I got them too tight. And, you know,
how leather pants are supposed to fit, though, on a woman at least.
Goddamn. I'll never forget thinking I've never spent this kind of money on a pair of pants before. I never bought a jacket for $700. And this is like 2001. That might as well have been a
$1,500 pants now.
God damn. Did we still have them?
Does she ever wear them?
She could never give them away.
Does she ever wear them though?
Nah, I think she wore them to a party not too long ago. All right. Now they're like 20 something years old, these fucking leather pants. I can't spend money on myself. I'm really bad about that.
A guy I just happened to see on Instagram the other day, a guy wearing tight leather pants.
Go ahead.
Man, you can't look cool. You just look like an asshole.
Yeah. I don't know what it was. It was the time and the place. I'd never known people to wear men who wore leather pants that look good. Obviously, you know, you see rock and roll guys, you know, looking pretty cool with leather pants.
I don't think they look cool.
You don't like the guys from Jane's Addiction or something like that? You don't think that was like a good look?
No, that doesn't do it for me.
No? All right.
Women. That's fair. I like it on women.
Oh, yeah. Crazy. Well, speaking of which, I don't know. That's a terrible. You want to do some weird news?
Hell yeah. Let's do it.
All right. So we got a lot of weird news. Every time my guy's here, we do a little bit of weird news. Actually, I've done a lot of weird news about the angle grinder community because of that. You know about
the Louvre?
Those guys. How great is that?
It's fantastic. And I also love it that there was that deal going around about how one of those guys was the detective, and it was like just some random dude dressed up, you know, like 20s, like he was from the 20s, just walking by, and they're like, this is the detective. That's so Paris. Fuck off.
You know what I've been saying forever now is if you're like a grinder disc company, you have to do whatever it takes to make, you know, the disc that people can ask you. I want the disc that got those guys in the loop.
Yeah.
You know. So I have some stuff that you sent me and I've been holding on to. I have a whole section called Ben Snoer stuff. This one is, I think you sent this to me and I think we should talk about it. China cracks down on funeral strippers.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that? Yeah. You send me stuff, I hold on to it, dude. I have a file. That's like a file cabinet. Open up the file cabinet, and then Ben's file goes in there.
Okay, tell the story. I mean, I've immediately got like a thought on this.
Well, all right. So China is cracking down on funeral strippers. China officials have launched its latest crackdown on funeral strippers. Yes, funeral strippers. The country's Minister of Culture announced late last month that we'll be targeting a slew of rural provinces for their obscene and vulgar performances at weddings, funerals, and temple fairs. As part of the new crackdown, a special hotline will be set up for the public to report any funeral misdeeds in exchange for monetary reward. According to the news outlet, it's been a long-time tradition in rural China for residents to hire strippers to partake in bawdy performances at funerals in order to attract a larger attendance of mourners. P.S. Smart as fuck.
Man.
Those locals believe that a high turnout of funerals is a sign of honor for the dead. This is shocking. According to the Global Times, scantily clad women in sexy lingerie and revealing clothes showing off their bodies in front of an electronic screen displaying a black and white headshot of the deceased with the text reading, "We offer profound condolences for the death of this man," are now a modern part of funerals in some rural areas of China. In describing a typical scene in which strippers perform at a funeral, the news site continued, the crowd pushed to climax, roaring with laughter, whistling, applauding, and cursing as the performers sauntered into the audience to jiggle their breasts and rub men's crotches to reminder of no photographs allowed can occasionally be heard. It's not the first time Chinese officials have waged war against this bizarre practice. In 2015, Minister of Culture announced his plan to get rid of the bizarre and increasingly popular striptease performances for corrupting the social atmosphere. This peculiar practice dates back to the 1990s, the experts attribute stripper performances as a way of worshipping fertility. In some cultures, dancing with erotic elements can convey the deceased wishes of the blessings of many of the children.
Man, if that doesn't make you hate communism, nothing will. I mean, commies,
yeah.
And that's such a great tradition.
According to the interpretation of cultural anthropology, the fet is originated from the worship of reproduction. Therefore, erotic performances at funeral is just part of cultural atavism. From the perspective of folklore, festivals and rituals such as Chinese New Year's are a critical time for people to lay down their life and embrace death. That's the moment for them to release their passion at the funeral. There's a lot to break down. Number one is I never thought of it as this idea where it was more about, like, it makes sense, the whole idea of, like, if someone dies and you want to make sure that there's a lot of people at the funeral, if that is your, is what, how you honor the dead by making sure people getting in there, you got to figure out a way to attract the crowds,
yeah.
Right?
And you know what attracts people? Titties.
You got that right. I mean, you got to be shitting me. I mean, that is like... That is legitimately like, that is the best workaround for, like, yeah, we're just trying to make sure we bump up our numbers of, you know, grandpa's funeral.
We're showing grandpa that we loved him. Everybody is.
That just seems like that whole concept is, well, you know, here's the thing about communism is nobody can do, you know, nobody's allowed to, everybody's got to be the same, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, I think it's hilarious. And I think that I can imagine, because I'll tell you what, I had strippers. A friend of mine did a bachelor party for me, and we had strippers. I had nothing to do with it, and they actually came to the shop. I have never told this story before. But we had a part of the shop, our shop in Brooklyn, and they made, like, this party room, and they had strippers come.
Perfect.
And these strippers were lewd. I mean, this was some lewdness. I got to be real careful.
Like, because they were shooting ping pong balls out of places? Like that sort of thing?
They weren't doing that. But there were ping pong ball adjacent activities. I'll keep it there. But it wasn't like,
Ping pong ball adjacent things, were they all tied together?
Let me just say this. Anything you add, these things that you're adding or speculating on are not far off from what took place.
All right.
There was, I don't want to get too, I mean, at some point I'm going to die and my daughter's going to listen to these episodes and I have to be able to, she doesn't need to know that there were, like, you know, there were implements.
Yeah.
There were, this was more than just a, this
props.
Was not a stripper.
Props.
There's equipment. There was stretching. There was.
Like, and when you say stretching, like calisthenics is a warm up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There was, like, I mean, it was, the craziest part was, it was shocking to me. It was like the most, you know, live sex act I'd ever kind of, you know, been a part of, or not been, been, wait, not been a part of, but been witness to. And I'll never forget It was intense. And I'll never forget that there was like a guy who was to get them after a certain amount of time. And he made it very clear if they didn't come out on time, he was coming in, you know, like guns blazing. Yeah. It was like, and it got to the point where my best man, Jamie, said, dude, these aren't strippers. These are hookers.
Yeah.
So there was like, you know, yeah, it was intense. So I'm thinking to myself, so my baseline of like this kind of behavior is dragged into a very, very low place.
I can't imagine that they're, I would imagine they are topless at most. And
probably not. This is rural China.
You think that probably you think they're full naked?
Like, I don't think that. I think that they're being like. See, that's the thing. It's like if you're planning this wedding now, let's just.
I mean, there's a fine line between strippers at a funeral and whores at a funeral. And I'm not going to judge anybody either way, but a stripper's just a little classier. And I don't think that warrants the government restricting this. Not only restricting it once, but restricting it again.
I don't want my government telling me what the hookers at my funeral can do or not.
Hell no.
God damn.
No, that isn't fair.
What kind of... God, can you imagine in the United States? I mean, I know that in they have, like, some funerals they have, you know, down in New Orleans, they'll have a band playing through the streets and stuff like that. Can you imagine how things would go if there were, like, you know, strippers at funerals and American funerals? And how do you, like, arrange that with the family? Oh, okay, so the, you know, the pastor will come in and he'll read, and then we're going to have the eulogies. And I remember speaking at my father's funeral, and I was very prim and proper. And then I couldn't imagine just saying, all right, now here comes the strippers.
Well, I don't imagine you're having that funeral service in a church.
No. No.
It would have to be maybe in the funeral home. And then, you know what?
Go ahead.
There's your business idea.
Go ahead.
You got your funeral home and stripper service, and you can just have that as an option.
No.
I guarantee people would do it. More people would do it than you think. They'd be like, oh, Grandpappy would think this is just hilarious. Let's do it.
Now, let's step forward now that we're in not communist China, but we're in capitalist United States. Let's work out the real business plan. People have to pay to come in, right? We got to make a buck off. We got to make a buck off Grandpa, right? We can't count on it. We can't count on, if you're the kids.
I think entrance is free, but it's a cash bar.
Cash bar at the funeral?
Yeah, why not? You already got strippers. We're not going to have strippers without beer or without liquor.
Here's what I think. Let's work this out. Obviously this is not in a church. This is going to be where's the body going to be? In the far back room?
Fuck, in the ground.
You got to get through the, are the best strippers by the casket? Like, now we need, like, we need a tier system to funnel people through.
Well, how many strippers are you really going to have realistically in
I think you need one outside to
No,
to,
you can't have them outside. I feel like that's, you got to get them inside the door.
Okay. So how do you promote this situation? Because then you can't bring the kids, right?
Yeah, but no, kids don't want to be at a funeral anyways.
All right. There you go. No kids.
Yeah, no kids.
This is going to be too. And it's got to be closed casket, right?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Oh, definitely closed casket.
Margarita Station.
Margarita Station. This is so great. Yeah. Can you imagine? What are you doing this weekend? Oh, I can't wait. I'm going to a funeral. Really? Are you psyched? Yeah, I'm so psyched.
It's going to be fucking awesome.
This is the best funeral. And you know what? I used to say to my dad, that puts the F-U-N in funeral. I mean, you can't. This is the best funeral ever.
Yeah, it puts the fun in funeral.
Oh, dude, but it's a money-making situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can imagine, it could be. You know, I think people got to put a little of the five, you know.
You know what? I think it's the funeral home that's really going to be making the money, though. I think, you know, the family, they get the send-off that they want and they deserve. The funeral home, like, they're in charge of hiring the strippers, cover charge if there is one, cash bar, margarita station, you know, maybe like a cigarette machine, which would be pretty sweet. Which I saw one of those in New Orleans, which I hadn't seen a cigarette machine. I can't remember the last time.
Will you pull the handle and the cigarettes come down?
Yep. And there's no smoking in bars down there now, which was very surprising.
Well, that's all over the country.
Yeah, apparently so. But, I figured a place like New Orleans would just kind of not give a shit.
Can I say that the first state that would probably have stripper funerals would probably be New Orleans.
I could say, yeah, you're not wrong.
That would be unbelievable. So you got a couple scantily clad girls coming to pay your respects, but then if the funeral home is getting the money, then they can't charge. Then they can double dip, and then they can charge the family for hosting it.
I think that'd have to be how it works.
Dude, you are making money in the stripper funeral homes.
You get the stripper to give a eulogy too.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to watch. Or, like, she's dancing and better. Talking.
How about this? How about the strippers all... Oh, here's how you do it. The strippers all bring the flowers. Like all the, you know, like the, you know, the bunting and all that stuff. And they carry it, and they slowly just walk past one after the other, and they're putting down the bunting, and they're putting down the this and the that, and they're just, and then you're just, it's almost like a procession of the strippers.
I like it.
And the next thing you know, I think it's the ultimate form of American madness. Would be, I don't know, can't believe the rural Chinese figured this out before we did.
Like in Dubai, I would think that would be a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just.
God damn.
Oh, I think it'd be great.
And the government cracks down on this? God.
Imagine the uproar there would be in Clarendon, Texas, in the Bible Belt, if they had a stripper at a funeral. I think if a stripper showed up and people just knew that that's what she did for a living, she would be in the newspaper.
I think you got to have two funerals. Because this is not going to be a co-ed situation.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
I think that you would have to figure out a way for there to be, because this just seems like a cultural thing.
Do you get to have female strippers at mama's funeral, or do you have to have dudes?
Oof, I'm not going to that one.
I'm not going to that one either.
I'm not going to mom's funeral. Why
no.
Because they're going to be fucking dead stripper, men strippers. Yeah. I don't want that in my life. I don't want that in my life.
No, I don't need that either. Nobody needs that, really.
All of a sudden, this business is really not turning into a very good business.
Yeah, yeah.
A margarita machine, though, at a funeral is a fucking strong-ass move.
That would be good. I mean, and that could go at any funeral.
That could go at any funeral.
Graveside margs?
God damn, let's tip one out to Grandma. Yeah. Oh, the strippers. That's such a thing. It's fucking hilarious. Those poor people.
Those poor Chinese people. They're not going to be sent off in any sort of good way anymore.
Hey, shout out to them for coming up with that idea.
It's brilliant.
I mean, that was a strong-ass move. I'm sure they weren't making money off it. They were just trying to get people in there so their ancestors felt like people gave a shit.
Well, how else would, like, if you were really trying to get a whole lot of people and you weren't going to have strippers, like, how else would you get them to come?
There's no other way unless you're, I mean, all I can think of is,
free booze.
Food's really good.
Nah, people aren't coming
really
for food. Like, I'm not... I go to a funeral because I know and respect the person, not because of the food. And if somebody says, there's somebody that, you know him. You probably weren't going to go, but there's really good food. I'm still not going because of the food. Now, if they had something else, just some, a little something. graveside margaritas, I guess.
Oh, God.
I don't know.
The good ones. They got to be really good ones, though.
Oh, they have to be.
And the glass has to have like some. It has to be like a good, keepsake glass.
There you go.
Yeah, stripper's a good move.
I like a souvenir funeral glass.
Oh, Bob, this shot glass is for you. Fucking the souvenir glass from a funeral. It's hilarious. Oh, God. I've been to too many funerals, And I'll never forget when I went to my dad's sister's funeral, my aunt, and I was making jokes to him. I was really young. And I said, isn't it weird that the first three letters of the word funeral is F-U-N? And we started laughing, and it was really super inappropriate. But I thought it was great. All right. We have a man fights for his life after swallowing entire burger without chewing it.
No, that's just stupid.
Okay. We have baker strangled to death after her scarf got caught in the dough mixing machine.
I feel like there's not a whole lot to be said on that one. I mean, that's pretty just similar to like a guy getting hung up in a lathe or a drill press.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good. Now, I did see a video of the other guy, and it was a drill, and it had something on chucked up in the drill that just looked like a Brillo pad, and then it cuts to the dude, and the dude got his beard hung in his drill bit. And ripped out half of a fucking long beard, like a nipple-length beard.
Good rip.
And that sounds horrible.
You know what I do? Anytime I have a sweatshirt, I'll always take out the string. Because with a sweatshirt, you never really squunch it up. You know, if you have the hood over your head, I've never been in a position where I've been like, man, I need to pull this tight so my fucking face looks like a rectum.
I got my first hoodie this year. This year. And I don't think it has a string.
Yeah, I got to get rid of the string.
I don't think it even has one.
All right, we have man who makes 20,000 pounds a year from his farts says he's blown away by the demand.
I need to hear about this.
Okay. Okay. Man who makes 20,000 pounds a year from his farts says he's blown away by the demand. Who makes thousands of pounds every year from selling his farts? Can't believe how much demand he's getting. Nath Wild, that's at @NATH_WYLD on Instagram. Nath Wild, that once again @NATH_WYLD specializes on making fart videos and has racked up a lot of cash doing so. A fucking pop-up just came.
That is,
I got,
well, this I didn't need to see him.
Sorry, I specialize in making fart videos. Explained. In fact, I make $3,000 Australian a month from them alone. While Nath started out working as a topless waiter, he soon began getting more and more popular on his social media. It wasn't long after that Nath moved to OnlyFans, deciding to give it a shot. At the start, it was very tame, just photos of me semi-naked and short videos of me posing, just a bit raunchier than you'd expect to post on Instagram. Soon enough, I was making enough money to leave my carpentry job, and not having to work 8 hours a day to commute was a huge bonus. I have the freedom to work from home. After his success in OnlyFans, Nathan ended up getting a fart video request, which he first wasn't keen to do. But soon he was getting more and more requests. He decided to film one in his bedroom. I was blown away by the demand. How does it actually work? Nath explained that the requests vary. Some followers wanting him to see his facial expressions. In terms of angles, people have specific things they want to see, like close-ups versus a full view, or maybe just staying clothed the whole time. Some people don't want me to spread my cheeks while they're the opposite. All right, God, okay. During the shoot, there's a routine. I start bloated, kind of part of the process, and go through until I feel lighter by the end. All right, so he's earned a lot of money.
People are fucking gross.
Yeah, super gross. I got to tell you, our friend Honor Kaglar has been on. He started OnlyFans not too long ago.
No, I didn't.
It was a joke before. He started an OnlyFans not too long ago, and I had him on here, and he told me that he made like a couple grand a month. And all he does is post videos of him working out. Like he does work, sometimes on Instagram,
yeah,
he dies
in
every film. He'll do some workout videos with a shirt on. And he's made like a couple grand a month just by posting it. And then apparently he gets all these messages from these dudes. It's all dudes.
Oh, I was going to say, without a doubt.
It's all dudes. And one of them found out that he was married. The guy was furious that he wasn't gay. He was just like, I feel robbed. I feel robbed that you're married. So, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to assume he's... owner didn't take shit off of that.
I don't think he cared. Yeah. You know how he is. He doesn't give a fuck. He's just like,
that is,
you know.
The farting deal. I guess I'm missing out on a lot of money that I could be making.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't want that money.
You think the farting in the jar guys could be for the when the grandma dies, we bring him over?
I think that would drive people away.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, we've talked about the selling of the jars and the farts and all that. And, I mean, man, if I was going to do it, here's your fucking Ziploc bag. Like, I'm not spending money on a jar.
I'm just stupefied at what people want. Like, I am stunned. And the other thing is, it's just like, this is not something that you want people to know about you.
Hell no. You don't. When, I mean, if you're going to do it, don't put it out there. Don't go on the news. Don't be in an article.
I'm not even talking about the dude who's making all this money farting in jars. I'm talking about the guy who's buying the jars. You know, you don't, I think that like when your time is done and you know things are about to, you know, maybe let's say you got a bad cancer diagnosis or something like that, or things are, you got to clear out all that shit for your family to not find, right?
You cannot
be having like, can you imagine a fucking bookshelf full of these jars? Like, I'm in a tape. This is this guy's at fart. This guy fart number 5, and your people are like, your family's like witnessing. Oh my god, he's got a collection of farts and jars. Our uncle
of man farts.
Man farts.
Like, that's just next level gross to me. Like, a fart is gross. I mean, a fart is funny, but it's gross.
But a fart is hilarious, but it is disgusting.
I just don't understand. I guess I guess arousal you'd get from a fart?
It's like, it's this, it's part, it's been inside, it's this gas that's been inside of you.
Yeah, but so is air that I'm breathing.
Yeah. I heard that there were people who were selling, like, their bathwater.
Yeah, yeah, we've talked about that. And a shit ton of them are making a bunch of money.
Yeah. I told Honor what he needs to do is he needs to do video of him in the farting in jars manufacturing business. And the funniest part would be is if he's, like, miserable and he's just like, oh, God, I gotta eat all this food and I gotta run around and I gotta fart in these jars. I'm not farting. I gotta make a certain amount of farts and jars.
And today I'm just like, I'm not gassy. It's just, you know, production's production's down.
Yeah, and then his wife is just like, come on. Your production's down. What are you doing? What are you doing? You gotta fart in jars. Oh, God. I gotta
have some Brussels sprouts and some beans.
I will never understand humanity. I'll never cease to be surprised. But at the same time, I'm grateful for other people. This is called Schadenfreude. I'm enjoying other people's misery.
You know, and you got to think, these fucking weirdos that like this have had to have been around forever. Like, it's surely this isn't like a new thing.
No.
But hey, how hard would it have been to find a fart in the 60s? Like a jar of fart.
Well, they had jars.
Well, I know they had jars, but how do you approach it? Like, excuse me, madam. Might I bother you to fart in this jar for me?
How do you find your community?
Yes.
Fart jar aficionado community. Yeah, it would have been hard. Now it's easy. Hey, listen, we were talking about communists. God bless the people paying for this stuff, because, I mean, that's part of the economy.
I guess so.
You know? I mean, the Australian, you know, I would be pissed off if I was like, the FedEx guy, where I was, the mailman, and the mailman stumbled upon whatever's fucking Nate Wilde's, and then all of a sudden I'm just like, dude, you're coming in here like 3 times a week with these boxes and they're jiggling a little and they're making like rattling noises. You telling me that I gotta put these fart jars in the packages in the back of the mailroom? Get the fuck out of here.
You know, and there's a part of it that does just kind of gall my ass. that I'm working my ass off.
Yeah.
And this guy is making 20 grand a month for farting.
I think he's making 2 grand a month.
Okay.
Or 3 grand a month. Not 20 grand. 20 grand a year. I think 20 grand a year, I think.
No, are you sure? I thought it was 20.
Oh, maybe.
Well, you got the story. Still, $2,000 a month to fart?
He made 20,000 pounds a year.
Okay. Well, still.
That's still a lot.
That's still a lot for farting. I mean, I do it every day for free. It's just sort of shit that people are getting rich off of doing something like that. And maybe it's jealousy. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we're probably, and let's not say jealous. Let's say envious.
Envious would be, yeah.
Envious, you know, we're not mad about it.
I'm a little irritated about it. I'm pretty fucking irritated. I wonder, what's a jar of fart cost? You think it's like $20 plus shipping?
Let's just say shipping United States. I mean, you're charging flat rate box, right? So that's like just barely, it's like 15,
what kind of jar is fitting
right?
in it? I guess one of those medium.
Ball jar? Medium flat rate.
$15.
$15. So
$35
right, so $15
for a jar of fart.
You think he's getting $15 a jar? Because he'll pay for the jar. How much is like a ball jar?
I don't know. A few bucks.
A dollar?
Ah, shit, I was going to say a couple. Maybe $2.50. I don't know.
Let's say $2.50 for the jar. So now, all right, so $2.50 for the jar.
We're up.
And then what are you charging for the fart? $15?
I don't think I'd sell a fart for anything less than 20. I know what I'm worth.
Yeah. It can't get much better than that, ladies and gentlemen. Ben Snures, all the best. Oh, this guy ain't going to be better than that. He knows what he's worth, God damn you. Guys, go follow Ben Snure on Instagram, and then you can buy his hammers at wellshod.com. Go buy his forging hammers. Hey, maybe, listen, by the end of this thing, there might be like a link for something else.
And I mean, if you get a hold of me and you want me to fart on your hammer, I'll do it.
Well, that's it. Maybe the jar.
Put the special
maybe
sauce
the,
on
maybe
it.
Maybe the hammer needs to be in the jar of fart.
There you go.
So you got to open up the jar of fart to get
shipping
the
hammer. Shipping is going to
be a lot. Yeah. Shipping is going to be a lot, ladies and gentlemen. Guys, this was fun, as always. It's always fun having Ben here. And we will, so all the links for Ben's stuff is going to be in the show notes. And Ben, it's always hilarious and fun and great. And I wish you the best Thanksgiving.
Maybe
I'll get you on before Christmas. We'll do a Christmas episode.
I'm game.
All right, guys. Listen, we will see you next week. Ben, thanks again.
Thanks for having me.